I'm Sean Crawford. This is Illinois Edition on WUIS, and I'm joined by reporter Lee Strubinger. And today we welcome Springfield Mayor Mike Houston to our studio. Mayor, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Sean. Happy to be here.
Let me just get started. A couple of issues that are have been on the table in the recent weeks here. One of them is what's being called an inspector general position. It's under consideration. The position, as I understand it, it would look into government business, potentially protecting taxpayers from wrongdoing. You've raised concerns, though, about the cost of this position and maybe some other things. Can you clarify your position?
If money was not an object, I think it would be a great position to have, but money is an object. And basically what the city council has approved is a proposal from a firm out of Chicago where they are buying 290 hours of service at $275 an hour. It amounts to $79,000. And what they will get for the $79,000 is that this company is going to, first of all, go back and review the existing ordinances, because there is a position within city government called Inspector General. It was never a full-time position. Mayor Karen Acera created it while she was in office and appointed an assistant police chief into the position as part of other duties as assigned. The position was in place for a couple of years and then sort of disappeared after 9/11 as Homeland Security became more important and that person took on those types of duties. So that while theoretically we have that position already in city government, we have ordinances governing that, this company is going to come in, review that, and then they are going to make a determination as to whether or not we need an inspector general within the city of Springfield, and then we'll offer suggestions if we do need that as to how it should be structured. And then for the last part of the contract, making the assumption that the city council approves that and that I also approve it, that they would go ahead and for a period of time, while they had time left on their contract, they would provide that service until someone was hired or something is put together. I point out a couple things. Number one, the city of Chicago is the only municipality in the state of Illinois that has an inspector general. So that whether we're looking at places such as Rockford, Peoria, Bloomington, Champaign, Joliet, you name it, none of those cities see a need to have it. Now, I use the term see a need. You have to balance need against want, and there is a cost. When this was originally proposed by Alderman Corey Jobe, he threw out the price tag of approximately $400,000 to do this. I question, number one, paying $79,000 to have this done, because I think that $79,000 could be better spent someplace else. I also think that we should avoid creating a full-time position, because if you think in terms of a full-time position, you're also going to create some other staff and you're going to have costs. And this is not going to be an inexpensive thing to deal with. I think that people have looked at that and they said, well, we will avoid problems. Well, inspector generals generally do not avoid things. They come in and look at things after something has happened. So that when we've had things happen, we have had organizations come in, such as the Illinois State Police that is looking at the shredding incident, that has provided a report to the Illinois State Appellate Prosecutor's office, and so that things are in fact looked at. If we're going to spend a limited amount of doing something, the real question is, do we have other needs in city government that money could better be spent for, whether that's employing additional police officers, firefighters, or providing some other type of service. And again, it's not a matter that if we had unlimited amount of money, I wouldn't like to have an inspector general. And if we have an inspector general, let me add one other thing. In the city of Chicago, it operates the same way that most inspector generals operate. These are independent people. They do not report to the mayor. They do not report to the city council. And we've had a lot of conversation with the city council that they want somebody who's going to report to them that they can sort of direct. That's not the way an inspector general works. In the city of Chicago, they actually, by ordinance, the mayor appoints a blue ribbon committee. The blue ribbon committee has certain requirements in terms of the people that are on the committee. They take applications. They then submit a certain number of names. I'm not sure whether it's three names or five names to the mayor. The mayor picks one of those people. They then, it is approved by the city council, and then the city enters into a contract for a four-year period where that person can operate independently. And if we're going to have an inspector general, I would want that person to be able to operate independently also.
Well, it sounds to me like you're leaning against the idea, at least based on cost, maybe based on some other factors then.
I have indicated all along that while it might be nice to have an inspector general, I don't think it's something we can afford.
During the city council meeting, it seemed like a lot of aldermen were using your administration as an example and pointing out some recent issues like the file shredding of the file shredding case in the police department as reason to have an inspector general. Does that mean you're still not on board with that?
Well, first of all, my question would be, what would have an inspector general done that we haven't done bringing the state police in to deal with this? I would point out that I was unaware that this had taken place. There's been, a lot of discussion about the fact that, well, the person who was involved with internal affairs questioned this, but he did not bring it to my attention. He took the order from the chief of police to do that. Had I been aware of it, we wouldn't have done that. When it was discovered, I was the person who asked the Illinois Attorney General to conduct an investigation. They referred it over to the Sangamon County attorney, who indicated he had a conflict of interest, who referred it to the state appellate prosecutor's office, who has brought the state police in. I also went ahead and, for only the second time in the history of the state of Illinois, signed away the client attorney privilege for the city of Springfield so that our attorneys were required to answer questions and not put up the defense that this was a client attorney privilege and they couldn't discuss it, to be able to get to the bottom of it. And personally, I'm looking forward to getting to the report from the state police, because a lot of people have made a lot of assumptions who really don't know what they're talking about, and I think it will be interesting to see what the actual investigation and report shows.
We heard this week, last night, at the city council that the city's going after a contract that didn't necessarily go out for bid, R.W. Troxel. Is that a good idea to insure CWLP like that?
Well, you know, first of all, I get a chuckle out of this because we have one alderman who raises a question. This is a person who is an attorney, has no experience, to my knowledge, in terms of dealing with insurance, has never been involved in business. He raises questions, but then he raises questions about everything that we do. And, you know, when you think about insurance, would you point out someone else in the state of Illinois that is bidding insurance? I don't know of anyone that does it. It is considered to be a professional service. And this isn't like buying auto insurance. There are only less than 10 companies in the entire country that will insure power plants. So what we do is that we use R.W. Troxel, which is a local firm. They have done this for over 30 years for the city of Springfield. And what they do is they go out and they shop the companies to get the best price that they can for the city of Springfield. As we have talked about this particular contract, this is a three-year contract. The contract is just a little less than $1.8 million a year, so we're not talking a small amount of money. The assets of the 40 properties that CWLP has is approximately $1.6 billion worth of assets. We only insure $350 million of that, with the idea that we're never going to get totally wiped out. So that we try to approach this on the basis of what is good business in terms of looking at the risk, making a determination as to what is the proper amount of insurance to have. And if we look at the way this has happened, our costs have gone down each year while we have increased our coverage. You know, it's if you look at this particular insurance policy, when I was growing up, you could buy auto insurance that would have zero collision or you had $100 collision. Today, I have $500 worth of collision insurance because there is a deductible on that. In terms of looking at our insurance policy, the deductible that we have varies, and it can be up to $1 million because, again, taking a look at the overall assets that we have, the size of CWLP, you're trying to insure for risk. And that is what we've done. This happens to be a three-year contract. And with this contract, the way it is set up is that if we have less than a 20% loss in terms of the premium, our premium goes down next year, and the same thing would happen in the third year. If the loss is between 20 and 50%, it remains the same. If it's over 50%, then they have the ability to raise the insurance premium, and we have the right to cancel that. Now, that is, to me, good management in terms of approaching this. The broker who is working for R.W. Troxell, I think, has done a very good job in terms of shopping this particular insurance. They did go out in the last 2 years and shop all the companies that will provide this type of insurance for us. And, again, this is a professional service. And, you know, you just insuring a $1.6 billion power plant is not like going to GEICO and buying insurance. And it's really hard when you sit down with an insurance policy to be able to compare two insurance policies. The one thing we do know is that when we had the explosion at CWLP a couple of years ago, this insurance company wrote a check to CWLP for over $50 million with no questions being asked and no problems in terms of insurance. We have been approached by various brokers who say, well, we would like to do this. And one of the first things they say is, well, we're going to bring in three different companies because we can't get a single company to take on this risk. Now, let's go back to the explosion we had a couple of years ago. If we'd had three insurance companies, what kind of problems do you think we'd have if the three of them were deciding who's going to pay for what? We didn't have any problems. And so I think that when you're looking at something like a professional service, you look at the expertise of the people that you're working with, you look at the professional nature of their operation, how long they've been in business, and you look at their track record. And I think that's exactly what the city council did, and that's why it was passed on a vote of 9-1.
And the city council, or R.W. Troxell, goes through AIG, correct?
Actually, the company that is providing the insurance for CWLP is an AIG-owned company. So it is one of the subsidiaries of AIG.
You mentioned in this case, maybe, and you mentioned there was one person, one alderman, Alderman McMiniman, who was more vocal about his concerns. But when we go back and look at things like the Napa contract, most recently got a lot of attention, there were some concerns there as well raised by other folks.
Basically McMiniman also.
Well, he's been involved in it, certainly. But, I mean, there were some others who thought maybe there should have been more of an open bidding process. You know, you still stand by that project as well?
Well, first of all, what we had done is that we had used a organization called the National Joint Purchasing Alliance. And here in the state of Illinois, the state of Illinois goes out for bid. And once they have a bid, local governments can use this bid. This National Joint Purchasing Alliance is an arm of the state of Minnesota. And if you go to its website where it has the seal of the state of Illinois and talks about local governments being able to use it, and in fact, in the year 2013, more than 400 local governments in the state of Illinois did use it and did spend more than $25 million with them, including the city of Springfield. We anticipated that there was a formal agreement between the state of Minnesota and the state of Illinois. Now, when we ask for a copy of the agreement, the Central Management Services said they couldn't come up with it. When we also ask for a copy of the agreement with the contract between NAPA and the Illinois Department of Transportation, which we do know exists, they also couldn't come up with that one. So I think there is a question, number one, because this is a longstanding relationship that units of local government, as well as the state of Illinois, has used, as to whether there is an agreement or there is not. We entered into a legally binding contract with NAPA based on the fact that we thought there was that agreement. Regardless, it was legally binding once we entered into it, and the City Council was given the opportunity to either reaffirm, which we said we would go ahead, or if they didn't reaffirm it, I would go ahead and institute the cancellation clause, which would be giving the company a 90-day notice. In doing that, everyone realized that if we did that, there was going to be cost savings that we were going to lose, and chances are NAPA was going to end up with the contract anyway because they operate over 300 of these operations across the country. They also, by the way, just for informational purposes, do this for the Illinois State Tollway Authority, just as we have are setting up for the city of Springfield. And in doing this, they originally went through a bidding process with the National Joint Purchasing Alliance. So it's not a matter that this was not bid. It was just not bid by the city of Springfield. And we were doing what we thought was in the best interest of the taxpayers and ratepayers of the city of Springfield in terms of rather than going out and bidding it ourselves, to go ahead and use a bid process that had already been in place.
Alderman Frank Edwards was weary about the contract after one of the meetings. The council had the chance to bring it out of committee and vote to not reaffirm it if they wanted to, but Edwards was saying that he felt either way the council was put or the city was put in a no-win situation, opening up for litigation. Do you see the city having potential lawsuits down the road because of this decision?
Well, first of all, and again, our corporation counsel provided a written legal opinion to members of the city council as well as myself, saying that, number one, this was a legally binding contract. Also, anyone can sue you for anything. There's no way that you can stop someone from suing you. But in terms of having a legal liability or right because somebody didn't get a chance to bid, our corporation counsel said that there was no chance that something like that would stand up. So I would not anticipate that anyone would be successful in filing a lawsuit. Other than NAPA itself, in terms of the fact we had entered into a legally binding contract with them.
Let me move on to some other topics here. It's been a violent few months here in Springfield. I know that you've tried to address that and the police department in Springfield. Do you believe that the any new approach there is working at this time?
Well, I think that the approach that that we took, which was to bring all the law enforcement agencies in, which it started at the federal level with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, U.S. Marshals Service, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, going to the Illinois State Police, bringing in the Sangamon County Sheriff's Office and the state's attorney and putting together a group to deal with the problem, I think has had a major impact in terms of what had been happening. is we look at Operation Falcon. At one point, we went out and did approximately 70 arrests on warrants that had been issued by the Sangamon County State's Attorney's Office. At the same time, we did a saturation situation where we went into a particular area of the city and saturated it. We were fortunate that the Illinois State Police gave us their tactical team so that we could take one of our officers, one of their officers, and put them in the same car and more than double the number of people that we had. We went in on a zero tolerance type of basis. We made a number of arrests doing that. We took off, picked up at least two AK type 47 type weapons, or AK-1s, whatever they're called, automatic weapons, as well as other weapons. They had drug arrest and this type of thing. And things have come back down. Now, you know, it's like anything else. You don't want to say too much in terms of what it has happened, because it can turn around in a split second. But I think that as a result of having the cooperation and the resources, not only of the Springfield Police Department, but bringing in all the other law enforcement resources that were available and having them work with us jointly, we really were able to make an impact and have a real impact immediately as a result.
Lee, go ahead.
Has a ceasefire helped calm down some of that?
Ceasefire was not a part of that. By the same token, ceasefire was out on the street talking to people. And we have developed a very good working relationship between the police department and ceasefire. And I think if you talk to the ceasefire people or you talk to the chief of police, you will find that they have regular communication and are working very well together. And if you look at what has happened in other cities across the state of Illinois where ceasefire has come in, you will find that is not the case. Because before this was done, we did check with other police departments to find out what had happened as a result of ceasefire. We didn't find a single police department that would recommend us getting involved with them. So we really worked with them in terms of trying to work with them from day one. One of the advantages we have here in the city of Springfield is that the grant actually went to the Urban League, and we were able to work closely with them to put together a program that I think is benefiting the entire community and doing the type of thing that ceasefire is designed to do.
I was at the Capitol a few months ago when you and several other downstate mayors came to the Blue Room and talked about downstate police and fire pension funds. There was no movement in the legislature on that. And what do you expect going forward?
I expect that the city of Chicago has a major problem with regard to their pension funds in general, but the major part of their problem is with police and fire pension funds. I would expect that at some point in the relatively near future that the legislature is going to do something to help the city of Chicago. And when we were doing that press conference, there were approximately 25 mayors from across the state. And this followed up to a previous press conference that had been held in the city of Chicago with Mayor Emanuel and suburban Cook County and Collard County mayors up there, where we're saying we have a problem in downstate. Now, downstate Illinois, every community that has a police and fire department over a certain size has their own individual police and fire pension funds. And what we're saying is the problem, if you take a look at downstate as a total, is just as big a problem as what you have up in the city of Chicago. So if you're going to deal with the city of Chicago's problems, we want the same solutions for the downstate police and fire pension funds. And that is what we are pushing for. We are also looking to say, are there ways that we can have structural changes to the way we do our pensions? And one of the suggestions that we have made is that the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, which has been in existence since 1942, has assets of approximately $32 billion and manages those assets for all local governments in the state of Illinois, that what we could think of is to take all the assets of the police and fire pension funds, let's group them together and give them to the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund to go ahead and manage. Because number one, if we look at the IMRF, their long-term investment return, and don't hold me to this because I'm you know, just speaking off the top of my head, but I think going back to about 1980, is 10.5% per year. Their return last year was a little over 20%. And if we could get those types of returns in our police and fire pension funds, that would begin to solve a lot of problems. The second thing is that each of those local funds, for example, here in the city of Springfield, we have a consultant for each of those funds. We have investment managers for each of those funds. They charge fees. Well, given the size of the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, their fees are very minuscule compared to what we are being charged. So there would be a savings right there. So just in terms of taking a look at it from a structural point of view, you could get a better rate of return at a much lower cost without even talking in terms of benefits. So there's a lot of different ways that you can approach this. And one of the things that we want is that as they make changes to the Chicago Police and Fire Pension Funds, that those same changes are made for the downstate police and fire pension funds. And one of the things that we would also look at in terms of doing this is that for every community would maintain its own liability in terms that it's not a matter you're going to pool all this money and then it goes into one big pool. It would be pooled for investment purposes, but the liabilities would remain with the communities so that a community that had a well-funded pension funds would not be penalized, whereas one that had not done so well would still have that liability, but that would be up to them to solve.
And I haven't been able to cover that issue as much this year. So is that something that's was proposed, or is that something that's come up more recently, that idea, the pooling?
That is an idea that I've been talking about for
talking about for
some time, and that is an idea that has been picked up by others, and that is something that I would have never thought about when I was in office the first time. But I would also point out that during the 1990s, both our police and fire pension funds were at a point of being 90% funded. As late as 1999, the fire pension fund was 89% funded. Right now, the fire pension fund is funded at about 46%. And if we take a look at our police and fire and combine the two of them, the police are funded at about 54%, so that we have approximately, in round numbers, $225 million worth of assets in those two funds, and we have $225 million worth of unfunded liability. So if you take a look at the two of them, we're at about a 50% funding level. Now, we didn't work ourselves into this problem overnight. It is something that happened over time, and you're not going to work yourself out of it. But we need to be looking at structural changes to be able to deal with this, because this problem is only going to continue to get worse if nothing is done. And now is the time to look at this again, approaching it on a long-term type of basis.
We're talking with Springfield Mayor Mike Houston. And Mayor, we only have just a couple of minutes left here, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. You helped bring in the Hy-Vee supermarket, worked on that project, part of developing MacArthur Boulevard. What do you see next for that area? I know there's still some people that live and work in that area would like to see more development.
Well, before I was elected mayor and before I retired from Town and Country Bank, I was the chairman, president, and CEO, and my office was at the corner of MacArthur and Ash. And started the MacArthur Boulevard Business Association in my office with three other people and myself because one of the things we wanted to do was that I knew there was an election that was going to be coming up, and I thought it was important that we get the attention of city elected officials. And I think that we have been very successful in terms of doing that, and that is important in terms of having anything thing happen. I think that when we look at MacArthur and we think about Hy-Vee invested $24 million into that location. They created 130 full-time jobs, 570 part-time jobs. But most importantly, they really removed a terrible eyesore and put something there that's very, very beautiful. It'll be a catalyst for other things. If we go to the south end of MacArthur by the Shield store, we've got the outlet malls, which I believe will come at some point. Was hoping that would be this year. I'm not being optimistic that that's going to be the case, but I am optimistic that it will happen at some point in the future. If we go to the north end, we have the Esquire property, which is a prime piece of property for development. So you've got the potential for a lot of good things happening up and down MacArthur in addition to Hy-Vee. And I think those things will happen, whether they're going to happen overnight or they're going to happen over a period of years. It'll happen. I can't predict that. But I will tell you that the city will work with anyone who wants to do something along there that's going to improve that area, just as we are working with Snooks in what they are doing on Dirksen Parkway by Singer Avenue, because that type of development is really what we need here in the city of Springfield in order to protect our property tax base and employment base in the community.
You still have some time left in this term in office, but we have yet to ask about your political future. 4 years ago, you talked about one term, and a year ago, you said by the spring of 2014, you would start thinking about potentially running for re-election. Spring's almost over. Have you changed your mind?
Well, I'm still thinking, and I have not made any decisions. I will tell you that last night my wife and I were talking about it after the city council meeting, and I would anticipate that we will be making a decision and an announcement within a relatively short period of time. And from my perspective, I've got all the time in the world to make that decision and to make that announcement.
Might we know before the state fair, for example?
The first day to collect signatures to go on the ballot, I believe, is August the 17th. So that certainly any decision that I would make would be made prior to that time and would be announced prior to that time.
Mayor, appreciate you coming in and being with us today.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to come out and check out the campus. It looks absolutely great, and it really is amazing the things that are happening out here. We had a business that is expanding, and in the discussions I had with the CEO of the company yesterday, one of the things that we want to do is to line them up with the university, because it basically is a cyber type of company that wants to really work with the university in terms of training people, looking for interns, and that type of stuff. And that's just a great opportunity both for the community and the university, but it really helps the community be attractive to those types of businesses, particularly a business that could be located, it's a virtual company, they could be located any place in this country.
Mayor, thanks a lot. I'm going to stop here, and you can take the headphones.